Earlier in our series at Christianity at Work and Relationships, we talked about marriage as a classroom for us to grow up. The same is true in employee and employer relationships. It is truly a place where we can decide to grow up, or we can decide to be self-righteous and hard.
Welcome to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of McKenzie Study Center. Our hosts are Dr. Jack Crabtree and Christine Barber. Jack is a teacher at McKenzie Study Center and Gutenberg College in Eugene, Oregon. By training, Jack is a philosopher, but his real passion is the Bible, having studied and taught it for more than 25 years. Christine is a licensed marriage and family therapist, having practiced for over 20 years in California and Oregon. Along with her husband, Larry, she is employed by the Caris Foundation, a teaching and counseling ministry. In this series titled Christianity at Work in Relationships, Jack and Christine discuss how God teaches us to trust Him through the experiences of everyday life. Here now are Jack and Christine.
We're continuing to look at Christianity at Work in Relationships. In other words, how does our Christianity, our faith, play itself out in the relationships that we have in our everyday lives? What we'd like to do for this program is talk about employer and employee relationships. And as usual, I'd like to start it out on kind of a different note. I'm going to tell you a little story. I might have told you this before. I might have even said it on the program, but I'll say it again. One of my first jobs, I worked for the state. Actually, not the state of Oregon where I live now, but another one. And I came in kind of wet behind the ears. That is, I really didn't know very much at all. But I was pretty gung-ho, and one thing I did know how to do was to work hard, to push hard, to make things move. Even if I didn't know what was moving, at least I could make things move. Well, I worked with a boss who pretty much sat around and really literally drank coffee and played with paper clips and talked to the other people in the office. And I needed direction from him, and I wasn't getting any at all. So I just kind of started pulling things together and making things work and meeting with people in the community and trying to figure out what in the world to do regarding my job. And I did a couple things. I'll mention some of those later. I think I did some really good things. I made the program really start working well. But my boss told me after several months that I castrated him, was the word he used. I was shocked because I wasn't aware of myself and what I was bringing in a negative way to that job. And I think that's something that's really important for us to consider as employees. Who are we and what are we bringing to this job? Very often we're looking outside of ourselves and saying, okay, what are these people going to do for me? How are they going to relate to me? And if they're a problem, what are they doing wrong? And I think as believers, as people who want to have good relationships with other people, that underneath the job, what we really need to be doing is loving other people. I think we need to look at this. What am I bringing?
Perhaps you could expand on what you mean. What are we bringing? What? Maybe you could be a little bit more specific about that. What do you mean, what are we bringing to the job?
Well, I have a unique personality and a way of relating to other people, a way of relating to my work. In order for me to understand my impact in my work environment, I need to understand who I am and how I relate so I can see how other people are going to be relating to me and that it's not all their fault lots of times that issues come up, but I need to understand the issues in regard to seeing myself accurately.
So that I'm not always making my coworkers or my employer the
problem.
Enemy and the problem, that I recognize that whatever problems arise, I'm contributing to them.
Right. So, yeah. For example, in this relationship I was talking about with one of my first bosses, he really did have a lot of things that he was being quite irresponsible. And yet I think the way I related to him was inappropriate, even though he was being quite irresponsible. I wasn't doing it in a good way. I was doing it in such a way that it was really hurtful to him and maybe even make him kind of pull back some more Maybe that was one of the results.
Would you say that part of your agenda was perhaps to shame him by your productivity? I take it that was the effect, in any case.
That was the effect. I'm hesitating some because I don't think initially that was my idea. I went in there thinking he was in the position of being my employer. He was in pretty high position. He'd been doing the job quite a while, and I was looking to him for help. And I would ask him for help, and he would give me information that ended up being very confusing to me, or not giving me information and then saying, why didn't I ask the question? But I didn't know the questions to ask. And so I think over time, I got into a place, and I think you're accurate, I didn't think about it in this way, but that I ended up shaming him, kind of getting back at him, because I ended up being so frustrated and actually quite scared, because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to do it. I was responsible for a lot and, you know, taking in a good income, and I wanted to do what was right, and I just didn't feel like I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think even though I think he was doing some things really wrong, the result was we were in this struggle with each other, and I played my own role.
Mm-hmm. The reason I ask what I ask is because it seems to me a pretty natural human response. When I mean by natural, I mean our natural sinful human response in the relationship of an employee to an employer, to want to expose their areas of vulnerability so that I look better, that I look better by comparison. I think that's really pretty natural, comes naturally to us. And what's striking is how really profoundly and radically different the exhortation of Scripture is to us as employees. I'm thinking of Ephesians in particular. He talks about slaves and their relationships to masters. We probably tend to dismiss that because we think, well, I ain't nobody's slave. But a servant would not be a bad translation of that. Slavery in that time was not really a whole lot unlike the employer-employee relationship. It was different. It was a different social structure, a different economy, different social relationship. So there was more control, more power that an employer had then than has today. But fundamentally, they really are not that different, the relationship. And so what Paul is saying to the servants here, I think, can be taken straight across and apply to us as employees today. He says, slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in the sincerity of your heart as to Christ, not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will render service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. Now, he doesn't say this explicitly, but it seems to me that if we're serving our masters as we would Christ, that's antithetical to wanting to expose the weaknesses and failures and vulnerability of our employer. I mean, that the kind of love that Christ teaches us as a disciple of Christ, the kind of love that Jesus would teach me to exercise, would be one to try to do everything I can to help my master, my employer, to protect them, to make up where they are vulnerable and weak, to kind of shore them up and fortify them and make the overall impact stronger rather than weaker, rather than leave them out there hanging to be exposed, to do what I can behind the scenes to make things work for them. I think that's what Paul would say to us today. What gives us the freedom to do that, I mean, this is true generally, the freedom to love comes in large part from having settled in my own mind what my life is about, who I am, where my significance lies, where my worth lies. It's when we're trying to derive our worth out of other people and those relationships and our relationship to our world, like the product of our hands, the productivity and work. If we're trying to suck meaning and significance out of our life, out of those things, we become very destructive people to the people around us. But if we recognize that it is my integrity that is my worth, how did he put it here? Doing the will of God from the heart, with goodwill render service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. The point being, a slave doesn't have any status in the eyes of other people, but part of Paul's point is he may not have status in the eyes of other people, but you can still be an objectively glorious and wonderful human being, and in the eyes of God be a star by virtue of our obedient service, our doing good to one another. And if we get clear that my real worth, my real nobility, my real glory comes from the quality of person that I am in relationship to other people, then I don't have to be recognized. I don't have to have the appraise and the applause of other people. I don't have to have I don't have to have all the status symbols that people in the world around me have. I can do without all that stuff because I'm settled in my own mind that the only thing that really counts is my integrity, and to the extent that I'm pursuing that, I am a magnificent human being. We compete with our employers if we need status, if we need praise, if we need the applause of other people, then we can't help but get into a competitive relationship with our employers. But if we are only acting before God, then we can help our employer, make them look good, even though we both may know that it's my efforts and my creativity and my intelligence and my problem solving and so on that led to the result. If I can just back off and not need other people to recognize that, knowing that I've done the good and right thing and being content with that, being satisfied with that, then it frees me up to be a truly loving individual, and in the context of any relationship, but in particular as an employee.
So what you're saying is what we need to do as employees is to set our minds right. And instead of deciding that I'm going to get my status, my prestige, my praise, my good feelings, my satisfaction from the work that I do, I'm deciding that I'm going to get honor from God by the kind of person that I am in the context of my work, or for that matter, anything else that I do. Mm-hmm. And if we can set our minds to that, you went on, is then we can really be people who are magnificent people because we're doing the right thing. We're doing the loving thing. And right. that's what matters. That's what's important.
Right. That's an incredibly high ideal that I don't know anyone who reaches. But
I'm glad you said that, Jack.
But I think that was your first point, is that by knowing ourselves, we know exactly the points at which we're vulnerable. Vulnerable to need praise from other people, vulnerable to need this kind of status, the things, the hooks that exist in us that other people can, or circumstances can pull evil out of us, can pull my self-centeredness out of us. So by knowing myself, I can work against my natural tendencies to not be the kind of servant that would be the ideal. So, yeah, we're not going to arrive here. This is an incredible standard that Paul is laying out for us. But as Christians, at least, we ought to recognize and acknowledge the ideal and do what we can to line up our life with that.
And this is how I think it works out practically, Jack. I really like the direction you went in, because if you hadn't, I sure would have pulled it here. So I really agree with you. It's the ideal. In a work situation, I'm thinking back to that one, what would have been the best thing to do would have been for me to, well, in any situation, sometimes I do have these trigger points where the bad stuff is pulled out of me. It's just an easier environment for that to happen, or harder, looking at the other side of the coin, for me to hold back. But I can at least, in that environment, at least try to hold my tongue or to try and behave in a way that is as honoring to my employer as possible. And I wanted to switch it also to behave in a way as an employer in an as honorable way as I can to my employee. Would you agree it works both ways?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
So we'll look.
Paul says something about that as well. So.
Okay, we'll go there. But
yeah.
It works both ways, that we're both supposed to be honoring the other person. And I, even if I have these trigger points where I just want to crawl all over the other person, what I need to do is discipline myself not to do that. I need to know that that's a problem and decide at least to behave in a way that's consistent with these principles that Paul is bringing out here. Very often, though, I might have to go home and work with myself on have all these areas that are very difficult for me. I can't go home and just yell at my husband and tell him how horrible the day was and rant and rave against this person for the next, 5 years that I'm working for them. I'm just going to build up resentment and bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a way to deal with it, and I think that's a way that lots of people do. I'll behave good there, I'll hold my tongue, but the bitterness ends up going out. So the way that I need to know myself, if I'm bitter and angry toward a person, what I need to do is ask myself some more questions. What is it that's really the problem here? Not what's the problem with my boss or what's the problem with my employee. I can look at that, but there's this bigger and more important question. What is it that's triggering me? What is it that I'm having a hard time dealing with? What is it that I need to learn about myself and use that information to start to work at changing my heart in a new direction? And bring that eventually to my work, then it is not only my behavior, but my heart that's starting to come in line at my workplace.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I'm using my workplace not just as a place to rail against, but as a place to grow up. And we've talked about that with our children, with our friendships, in our marriages. We can rail against the person and find out what's wrong with them, or we can turn it around and look at ourselves and say, what do I need to work on? Now, that doesn't prohibit me from also looking at other people and pointing out what's going on, but it comes from a different heart. And I do think it's wise for me as an employer or as an employee to be able to talk to my employer about the issues that I see in them, but not from the heart of, you're the bad guy, I'm the good guy, you change or things aren't going to be okay.
Yeah, that's very good. I think that's exactly what Paul is talking about here. He says to the slaves to serve them with fear and trembling in the sincerity of your heart. That's what you were really talking about, is I need to have my service and my understanding and my love for my employer be something that's not just plastered on the outside. It's not just behavior. It's something that I really am trying to resolve within myself, that whatever obstacles there are to me being loving, I need to identify them, sort them out, and decide once and for all, what do I want my life to be all about? These fears and passions and prejudices and areas of self-centeredness, or something else entirely. But I have to know what the competition is and have to come to understand that and resolve what I really am committed to in my heart. And he goes on, not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ. That probably a lot of people learn to hold their tongue, like you were saying, and keep their behavior acceptable out of fear of consequences, to keep things kind of oiled and smooth at work. But in their heart, they're resenting and bitter and hateful toward it. That's the very thing he's saying, don't do that. Don't just plaster it on the outside. Don't just conform your behavior externally, but make it an inward thing.
And that's the hard thing, is
yeah.
We can say we understand that concept. Okay, I've got to, I kind of have to plaster on the outside because that's the right thing to do, but I also have to work on my heart inside, and that's really the most important thing that Paul's pointing to there.
And the only thing that ultimately counts is what he's saying.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But I don't want to trample on people while I don't have my heart put together
right.
yet.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
So that's why both are working together.
Right.
But I explained it a little bit. How do I work on my heart? Do you have an example of how you've done that in the workplace? I think we need to put a little bit of meat on these bones, because it's a very important and difficult concept.
Well, the way I can't think of any examples of being an employee where I had to resolve anything. I'm sorry, as an employee, I've had coworkers that irritated me at times. They would take advantage of me. They'd make me do all the work while they kind of relaxed and rested and didn't really carry their weight. And that very easy for resentment to build up when you're working hard and breaking yourself, and they're just kind of relaxing and not willing to share. I just, in any situation like that, I preach myself a little sermon. I have these tapes that I play, in my head, and reminding myself of what's important. The content of it, in that case, the content of it was very much like what Paul is saying here, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. My recognition that, is this unjust, what's happening here? Yes, it's unjust. What are you going to do about the fact that it's unjust, Jack? Do you need and require justice now, immediately, right now? Do you need them to carry their weight now at the job? Or can you be content to wait for the end of all time when all things will be sorted out and justice will be meted out and you will get your due reward? Is it enough that you are, can you be satisfied with the fact that you are the kind of person who would make sure they are carrying their own weight and not the kind of person who would slack and let somebody else do it for you? Is there not a kind of delight that comes from that, Jack? Is there not a joy that comes from that? Can you not be satisfied that you're a more substantive human being is the kind of person who operates with others with that kind of integrity? And then I'd settle down and I could answer the question, yeah. If I had a choice between them or being me in the way we're behaving right now, would I not choose what I'm doing, not what they're doing? And
so what you're doing,
that diffused my anger.
You're kind of reasoning with yourself and saying, wait a minute, what's important to me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I want to bring it a step further, and I wonder if we can play with this for a minute.
Okay.
I'm going to push you on it, okay? Is this a particular situation that you're thinking of that you had quite a bit of energy with?
No, probably not.
Okay.
Not a lot of energy.
Then I'm not sure I can push you with it very well. Let me give an example out of my own life and see if we can kind of look at how do I work with myself in the context of a job so that I'm not just behaving well, but my heart is starting to work toward becoming more like what Paul is talking about, have a sincere heart. When I was in that job, like I said, in the beginning, I really tried to work hard and tried to really kind of respected my boss just because he was one of my first bosses, and I didn't have this idea that bosses weren't going to do well. And I even at that point went to another person who was supervising me and said, this is a situation that's going on. What should I do about it? And he said, you should never talk to a supervisor about your boss about anything that's negative. You need to just be submissive to him and shut up. And so I don't agree with that at this point. I think the way I did it would be very important, but and the heart that I came from would be very important, but I don't agree with that now. But nonetheless, I didn't talk to him for months and months. And finally, I just got really upset about it. It seemed really wrong what was going on. I thought he was really wasting funds and not being responsible at all, and really looking at him and really focusing on that. So I went and got a counselor from, we were in an agency that was right next to a counseling agency, and I knew that my boss respected this counselor and asked if my boss would meet with me and him, and we would get together and try and work this out. So the counselor came and the three of us met, and it was the most frustrating thing. You just wouldn't believe it. And my boss kept deflecting things. He kept turning things around. It was very, very confusing what went on. Finally, the counselor, who was a very astute counselor, he'd been one for maybe 20 years, stood up and literally did 3 or 4 turns around, just stood up and turned around and around and around. And he said, I just feel crazy. And he goes, I can't work with you, talking to my boss. You are upsetting everything and confusing everything, and this is impossible. And he walked out. And, you know, that was my opportunity to go, yes, I've been right. Victory. This guy is a mess, and it really validated that for me. So where I went with that was, he was bad, I went on the warpath, and I eventually got him fired. I think that he should have lost his job, even as I look back today. But all I was focusing on self-righteously was how bad he was, and not also at my part. So even though I think he was wrong, and I think the people in charge saw that and did end up getting rid of him, I didn't grow up in that situation in ways that I needed to. I know how to be assertive. I know how to put my foot out. And I did it there, and I did it effectively. But what I didn't know how to do, and what's been more difficult for me, is to have a kind heart towards somebody. In fact, I overlooked my opportunity for growing up, and I strengthened things in myself that perhaps needed to be softened. The question I could have asked myself is, beyond the fact that he is doing a poor job, is there any reason why, Christine, you are responding to this in such a big way? Do you follow?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm turning around and I'm looking at myself and I'm thinking, what is it about me that's so difficult? Because there were other people in that position, our secretary, a couple of other people that I had hired, that weren't also on the warpath. It didn't bother them as much. I think the answer to my question, why is it so big to you, is because my reputation was on the line. I was afraid, without his support, without support from somebody, that I would end up failing and I would look like a failure to all the people around me. His lack of support, his way of approaching the job, reflected very poorly on me. I had to work twice as hard. But why was that important? Because I have a really hard time looking like a failure. I was bringing that energy of my fear into this situation. Had I looked at it and had I worked with it, I think I could have softened in my attitude toward him, because it would have also then been part me. Part of it was my fear. Part of it was what I need to work on. And it wasn't all him. I think had I done that, had I been willing to do that, to see that, to grieve that, to mourn what I was afraid I was losing, to sit with that, to be vulnerable with it, I could have then gone to him in a very different way. But I was on a warpath. I was on a mission, and it had to be that way or I would lose. I didn't make it about me at all, though. I made it all about him, self-righteously so. So you with me?
Yeah, I am. I think so. Are you suggesting, however, when people look at, when an employee looks at himself, that if an employee responds strongly to their work environment, their situation, when you look at it, you're looking for the truth, right? I mean, you're looking at the truth about yourself.
Yes.
And the truth about yourself is not necessarily whatever it is making a contribution to the relationships. But the truth may be morally neutral rather than sin.
Give me an example.
Both can happen. I'm thinking, for example, of Romans 14, where Paul talks about not holding people in contempt who have a different set of values. Their service of God includes eating vegetables only, he says.
Mm-hmm.
Another person feels free to eat meat. Another person eats vegetables only, and they do so to worship God. A person can have strong feelings about certain taboos, for example, or certain ways of behaving toward people, that they just feel very strong. It's a personal value.
Right.
That they highlight that. They emphasize that in their life. One thing for me that my kids have found out is that telling the truth is a really big deal to me. There's a lot that I can tolerate, but you lie to me and you're going to get a much bigger eruption than anything else. Now, is it because lying is really objectively more, telling the truth is objectively more important than any other aspect of godliness? Well, not really. But for some reason that I don't know that I could fully understand, but for some reason that's a big deal to me. It gets an emotional response that other violations of godliness don't get. Now, am I wrong to hold that as a personal value? No, I'm not wrong to hold that as a personal value. But I need to be aware that the exaggerated sense of emphasis that I put on that, that's a very idiosyncratic personal thing, I need to take that into account when I recognize in relating to other people and assessing other people and evaluating the situation and so on. You know, what I may conclude is not there's something evil at work here. It's something good, but you have to recognize where the emotions are coming from, Jack. They're coming from your personal idiosyncratic emphasis. What are you going to do with that? And I can then either do something evil with that, or I can do something good with that. That's where good and evil would come in. But the strength of the reaction in and of itself can be neutral, I think. That is morally neutral.
The strength, you mean, I guess what I'm hearing is that it is a good thing to want honesty. That's a morally good thing.
Right.
And that you're reacting big is the problem. You're maybe, some people would react on a scale of 1 to 10 at a 5 level, and you're consistently reacting at an 8 or a 9. The difference between that 5 and 9 is pretty big, and that's an issue for you that you need to look at. Not that honesty is a problem, but you need to pay attention to, that's a problem for you. You're maybe going to be more hurtful toward people or respond in a bigger way toward them because you have this issue, particularly about honesty and about lying.
Yeah, I don't know that... I guess what I'm calling reacting is that emotion that wells up inside.
Yes.
I don't know that that's necessarily wrong. I think that's just, we have our own individual, you know, inner map that includes the fact that really, really lights me up emotionally. It's what I do with that is either right or wrong. If out of that energy I try to hurt or coerce, disrespect people in one way or the other, that's wrong and ought not to be. And I need to recognize that the momentum that's created by that energy makes it very easy for me to try to hurt other people or disrespect them somehow, do something disrespectful. And that's wrong. But I'm not sure that the reaction itself, the emotional energy itself is wrong, because it's triggered by something that's good. It's a value that we all ought to hold.
I agree with you that it is a good thing, and what you need to look is that momentum that gets going and how you deal with that. And that's partly knowing yourself, and that's part of what we're talking about here. I need to know myself that I'm going to respond big to people lying, and I need to hold back a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
But I would go to my example too, Jack, and I don't think that it's a wrong thing to want to have respect from people. It's or to be a person that is valuable. That's something that's inside of us that's really an important value. God talks a lot about valuing us, and though I was looking for it in the wrong direction, it is something that my nature wants and is a good thing. So there's a lot of morally neutral things that we want.
Right.
It's how we go about getting them. It's our ideas behind them very often. But let me take what you we're talking about a step further. It, you do know yourself, and you need to kind of hold yourself back when lying becomes an issue. You probably have this trigger of, okay, Jack, pay attention. But maybe there's a place where you could learn even more if you understood the place that that comes from. Maybe instead of just preaching yourself a little sermon, you could indeed become a softer person in this regard, because you've looked at it from an angle that has instructed you even more.
Mm-hmm.
So I could say to myself in my situation, okay, Christine, you know that it's wrong to just flail at this guy, to just be self-righteous here. You know that when somebody is hurting your reputation, that this is gonna happen. I could also look at that from a deeper perspective, where I am actually mourning the reality of perhaps not having been respected in my life, softening myself to that so that I have a different heart to approach the situation.
I think what you're saying is true, Christine. Maybe this is a difference of opinion between you and I. I'm inclined to think that that's what happens to us as God sanctifies us. We just will life circumstances, the pain, the agony, the anguish that happens working with other people is going to open me up to greater self-understanding. I fear trying to run ahead of the Spirit of God in that regard. In that we are such foolish people that if we go looking for explanations, we will find them, but whether they're the truth or not is a whole other question. And so that's the only thing that I worry about, and that I would want to caution us about, is that we really get in touch with really what's going on, not decide I have to know myself, so I will. Because the problem is we can always give an explanation of ourselves, but is it really the truth? Our heart is deceitful enough that we could believe anything that we wanted to. So I think what you're saying is really true, and it's part of what happens in our life, is that we come to see ourselves more and more clearly. But I'm not... Maybe this is what you're saying, and I agree with this. The important thing is that we really open ourselves up to an honest appraisal of ourselves.
Yes.
If we open ourselves up to an honest appraisal of ourselves, I think the Spirit of God, through life circumstances, will bring us to self-knowledge, true self-knowledge. That the problem is that can be counterfeited, and that is, if what we emphasize is knowing ourselves rather than honesty, then I can know myself and not really be telling myself the truth. Because somebody around me is telling me self-knowledge is important, know yourself, well, I guess I better know myself, so here I go.
But I think then two are not juxtaposed to each other.
No, no, no.
Honesty and knowing myself really have to be hand in hand, Jack.
Well,
if I really truly know myself, then I'm being honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're right. Saying don't do a counterfeit. And it seems to me that I'm not doing a counterfeit if, when I come to a place of not just evaluation, or what's the word you used? Not just coming up with an answer, but coming to a greater understanding, I'm going to kind of be, it doesn't really matter what the story is behind it, but I'm going to be struck by the truth of it.
Right.
It might bring me to tears. It might bring me to a recognition of needing to forgive somebody or to forgive myself. It will soften me in some way toward the qualities that God wants me to work at.
Right. Exactly.
At being a holy person, at being a more godly person. So if, in looking at this situation, there was a situation between you and I was very strong in my approach to you regarding somebody, and I still feel that the way that situation was handled, I don't agree with in many ways. But in looking at that, why is that so important to me? I came to some understanding of myself that helps me approach it and you differently. I think that the information that I got was probably true because it softened me.
Right, right.
So I'm not just coming up with these stories, to have explanations of why and to give myself a reason out of it. But it's the very opposite. It's I'm coming up with stories to help me understand myself better that gives me a reason really to have to mourn more, to have to understand from a perspective, to understand my sinfulness better, actually.
Sure.
And if that is the outcome, then that's a good outcome. And the story can go by the wayside because I've gotten an outcome that's valuable.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think what I'm saying is sometimes self-knowledge takes time, and it's okay to be agnostic at times and say, I don't understand myself yet. I don't know why I'm reacting this way. I don't know why this is important to me. Mm-hmm. But that's okay, too.
Yeah, and sometimes I can't get further.
Right.
Sometimes I just can't get to that wall, but at least I need to acknowledge, wow, I really had a big response. I have a lot of momentum. I have a lot of energy going
right.
on here.
Right.
There's something going on. The other day, we're outside of employee-employee relationships, but the other day my husband was picking up actually a very, very lovely birthday present for me. He was really going out of his way to do it. He spent a lot of time. He spent a lot of money. We were going to meet together at this restaurant, and he was going to give me this gift. And I knew what was going on. We'd kind of done this together, and he was finishing it off, and he was caring about me. But somehow the communication of how and when we were supposed to meet for lunch got messed up. And I got really upset. And the first thing I thought was, well, he just doesn't care about me. That's ridiculous. But that's what came to me in the beginning. And I had enough time between the time I saw him and when I left home to finally get to lunch and meet with him to kind of talk myself out of being angry at him. Because I don't know why exactly I was angry at him. But boy, I really responded. And that's a time when I just needed to say, there's something going on. It doesn't have to do with Larry. It's not his fault. It seemed like it. But it just didn't make sense. And so at that point, I just preached myself this little sermon that says, back off, hold off, care about him. He's not the guilty one. And it was just a miscommunication. But I do think that it's important for me to not just let that go by the wayside. It's important for me to ponder that and to eventually figure out what's going on so that when these situations come up, I can know that and soften toward that information and that self-understanding.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to continuing for the next 20 years with him, having this response and just, you know, gripping and, you know, holding in the reins and really being angry underneath and letting it come up again and again and again. There's a lot more value in going further than that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Because, I mean, it comes back to what you said right at the beginning. It's what Paul is talking about in Ephesians. To serve or to do the right thing as what he calls eye service or as a men pleaser is not what it's all about. That in the end does not accomplish the work of the Spirit of God in sanctifying us. It's getting these things resolved in our heart. As you said, you preached yourself a little sermon. That's how I resolve it as well. But preaching myself the sermon is not behave this way, don't make any commitments in your heart. It's a sermon to my heart. It's a sermon to the deepest core of me. What do you want yourself to be all about? And I think you're right. Ultimately, as God sanctifies us, that's going to include an increased self-understanding. But even if I'm up at a wall and I don't really even understand why I'm inclined not to do the right thing, I can still be committed to doing the right thing from the heart.
Right.
Not with resentment and bitterness as I just outwardly do it, but from the heart, whatever is going on with me, it's false. Whatever is going on with me, it's not it's not reflecting what my commitment should be, my priority should be, my faith should be, and so on. I'll have to figure that out. In the meantime, here's how I must think about this, not this other way. Not the way I'm naturally inclined to, but this other way. That's what I mean by preaching myself a sermon. And it's not just, I think a lot of people understand that to mean just tell yourself how to behave and behave that way outwardly. Well, that doesn't, I mean, sure, we should behave outwardly right. The right way, but it doesn't advance my sanctification. It's by preaching to my heart that I, and listening from the heart, that I advance my sanctification.
Okay, so what you're saying, and there's two things I think here that are important to me. One is I don't just preach myself a little sermon about how to behave differently, not just go, you know, and decide not be angry at Larry.
Right.
But to decide that's not the kind of person I want to be. I want to be a kind person. I want to be a forgiving person. I want to be a loving person. And so go to him with, preach myself a sermon in the sense that that's what I want and how can I get there.
Right.
The second thing is, for me, is I look at the other person and I decide if it's about them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And very often it's not about them. It's about me. I'm having this over-exaggerated response to something, and I need to see that. And so it's both of those together. And if I can unlock see, we get these claws locked on, a death grip on the other person, it being their problem. And if I can really get that death grip off if I can really see the issue that's mine.
Yeah.
Do you follow?
Yes, I do.
Jack and Christine will return in a moment. Almost 20 years ago, the Mackenzie Study Center in Eugene, Oregon, was created as a place where people could come and seriously think about their faith. Over the years, Mackenzie has grown in different directions and gone through various changes, but one thing has remained constant: a passionate love of God's Word and the truth it contains. The Mackenzie staff is dedicated to studying and understanding the Bible. Individually, they want to know what the biblical authors meant when they wrote the Bible. They want to peel away layers of false teaching and get to the very heart of the biblical message. And this is not easy. It's hard work. It requires years of dedication and the willingness to believe what the Bible actually says rather than what they might want it to say. These men and women also believe their studies and their teaching are not perfect. They know their understanding is limited, and they may be wrong, but they trust God to give them the eyes to clearly see His truth. They also encourage others to join them in their efforts, to ask them tough questions, to challenge their conclusions, and to take the Bible seriously. More importantly, they desire that all may come to the wonderful saving truth of the gospel. Much of the teaching done at Mackenzie is available on tape and can be ordered from the tape catalog. Papers and the free monthly newsletter News and Views are also available. Information about how you can find out more about Mackenzie Study Center and its ministries will be given at the end of today's program. Now, let's return to Jack and Christine.
Jack, you have been on financial support, I believe, for about 18 years, you said.
Yeah.
That is a really, really long time. In fact, it's kind of staggering to me. What's that been like for you?
I don't have anything to compare it to anymore. It's been so long. It's been my life. There have been times where I really didn't know whether the money was going to come in, and I was actively looking for jobs because I just didn't know if I was going to be able to feed my family. And those have been really rough times, but really important times. Some of the more important crisis situations in my life where God has really got my attention. And I've had to ask myself, who's in charge here? Are you running your life, or is God running your life? And came to some, I mean, was forced to come to some pretty firm conclusions that God really had the right to do with my life whatever He wanted to do with my life, whether He had my approval or not. And those were very important times. But looking back, you know, one of the most striking things when you ask that is a group of people, a handful of people, who have faithfully supported me every month for all 18 years. And most of the people who have been most faithful are people that if I saw them on the street, I couldn't recognize them. I wouldn't know who they were. They just early on decided that they wanted to support my ministry. One couple lives in New Jersey. I never see them. When they started supporting me, I barely knew who they were. But they have faithfully supported me for 18 years.
Do you even know them today?
Only by name. I mean, I could, but as I say, I couldn't spot them on the street if I ran into them. And I've often reflected on what an incredible commitment that is, how faithful and responsible and conscientious that is, because I don't do that. I'm not that faithful. But it's been a real steady, not only the financial impact, but the kind of emotional and the emotional support that lends for people who are just steady and reliable and faithful has been really an important thing.
Are you saying just an incredible encouragement to you?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
To see that and be the recipient of their generosity also.
Yeah. Because I'm not doing anything for them. I'm not a friend. I don't have any other input into their life. I probably have barely any input in their life. I'm not even sure they benefit all that much from the study and the teaching that I do. They're ministering to me. I'm not ministering to them. It's really been significant.
So here we are again in a position where we need financial support. And I guess it's just consistent with what you're very used to. I'm not used to this, Jack.
Yeah.
You are. Could you tell our listeners what you would like to out of your own experience?
Well, just that it is a really valuable and important ministry that people can have. A way of serving God is if they see something that they really believe in and really think represents the impact in the world that they want to have by faithfully and reliably giving money to that. It really truly is both an encouragement and a facilitator of a ministry that otherwise isn't going to happen and couldn't happen. So it's something to consider as just a ministry, I think.
And I think what you were saying very definitely is, as these people in New Jersey, it has been them ministering to you.
Yeah. And we're not asking money for us. We're asking money for just to pay the broadcast costs and the expenses for the program. I have a whole other network of support for me personally, but what we're asking for now is just people who want to support the purchase of broadcast time and overhead costs for this radio program.
You have been listening to Christianity at Work, a radio ministry of Mackenzie Study Center. If you would like a free copy of this program or would like to know more about Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College, you may call us at area code 541-485-4801. You can write to us at 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. And we're also on the Internet. Look for us under Mackenzie Study Center or Gutenberg College. Tapes can be purchased with check or Visa. If you didn't have time to write all that down, I'll repeat it again in just a moment. The Mackenzie staff has worked for years studying the Bible, understanding the world we live in, and pursuing what it means to be a Christian. They desire that their ministry may be valuable to others, but they also know that their efforts are in deep need of God's mercy. You can join the Mackenzie staff in their ministry through their classes, seminars, tapes, and papers. The Mackenzie Study Center is a nonprofit ministry entirely funded by the generous contributions of people who believe in its goals and have benefited from its ministry. If you would like to make a gift to Mackenzie, it will be entirely tax deductible. Just mail your check to Mackenzie Study Center, 1883 University Street, Eugene, Oregon, 97403. If you would like to request a free taped copy of today's program, the telephone number is 541-485-4801. Now, on behalf of Dr. Jack Crabtree, Christine Barber, and the other staff of Mackenzie Study Center, thank you for listening.